It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Real Estate Investor Podcast. Brett Bernard with you. In studio, of course, is our pinhead producer, Richard M. Britton. I want to welcome Josh to the show. I want to talk to him a little bit about his strategy. Josh is an investor and a good friend of ours. We spend a lot of time working together and we spend a lot of time playing together. So we've had some memorable nights at the bar and we've had some memorable days on the road buying real estate. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
We are sponsored by Title Assurance and Escrow, a title company here in Cordova that does all of our closings, title work, escrows, and we only use Title Assurance and Escrow. That relationship is very important because we can get things done for our investors quickly and easily. So to speak with Title Assurance and Escrow, call 901-737-3332. Ask for Chris or April.
I was going to bring it up. I'm going to bring it up now because I saw a little thing on the royal family in Britain a couple of days ago. And what I didn't realize is that you have a bunch of pompous, rich people that really don't do anything effective, but that the British people pay taxes to take care of them. I mean, is that like not the worst welfare situation ever?
Doesn't that sound like politicians?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, but y'all willingly pay taxes to keep these people propped up.
Why'd you think I left?
Well, I'm not giving you that much credit.
I noticed.
You probably left because you had to. But I will say this. They get 86 million pounds a year. What's a pound?
It's a unit of currency. It's sterling.
I get that. But I mean, compared to the U.S., what's that worth? 100 million?
No, about $1.24.
$1.24?
Yeah.
Okay. So 1 pound's $1.24. So y'all are paying 86 million plus some other stuff to the royal family just to keep them there. And I'm curious from a Briton's perspective, what's the point?
I would say at this point, the only point is tourism.
That's it.
If the royal family went away, there would be a huge dent in tourism.
Is that really all that y'all have in Britain? I feel sorry for you people. You have nothing but the royal family?
No. I just think it's a big factor with tourism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know real numbers, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay, I got one more question, then we'll move on with the show. What is the Duchy of Lancaster? It's spelled D-U-C-H-Y. How do you pronounce that?
Duchy.
Duchy?
I would imagine.
If somebody called me Duchy, I'd probably knock their teeth out.
Well, I mean,
Duchy. I would prefer Duchy of Lancaster. That sounds better.
Back in the 80s, you'd pass the Duchy to the left-hand side, wouldn't you?
I guess so. Oh, my God. I'm so glad I'm not a Briton. I'm not from Britain. So, born and raised in South Louisiana. I'm very proud of it. Josh, you started buying when?
I think I was about 21 years old when I bought my first house. I wasn't necessarily huge into the investing at that time, but it made me realize the value that real estate can have.
Okay. So, Josh, you started at 21.
Mm-hmm.
You bought your first property. What did you buy it for? Investment?
No, I actually lived out there. This was in Newtown, North Dakota, like right by Lake Sakakawea. I moved out
Lakes
there.
Lakes of what? Say that again?
Lake Sakakawea.
Okay. All right. Just making sure you said the right thing.
Right. Yeah, I moved out there and I needed a place to stay and there didn't really have access to many places to rent. So I ended up buying a lot there for like $19,000 and I moved on as big of a modular home as I could buy and put a garage on it and I lived there for 5 years.
Then you had some roommates, right?
I did, yeah. The first thing I did was start packing those rooms up, you know. I had my own room and three other rooms that I was pretty sure I could get about $500 a piece out of them. So
it turned into some money.
Yeah.
That's when you got in. I think that's when you realized the investment game might be a good avenue.
Absolutely, yes.
So tell everybody, just for those that are listening, what you do now full time.
Right now, full time, I own 3 Firehouse Subs restaurants.
Nice.
Yep.
Now, what I find amazing is, what did you do before that?
I was an electrical lineman in North Dakota.
North Dakota.
Yep.
Hanging on poles and blizzards.
Hanging on
turning
poles
utilities
and blizzards
on.
And, yep, all that nasty weather.
And over lunch, we had somebody asked you the question about how cold, what's the coldest it's ever gotten? And you said a number, and it just blew my mind.
You know, and
I know
I'm
it's
not
in the
sure.
Negatives.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's way negative, like negative 50,
Ooh,
you know.
Negative 50 degrees.
That's
I don't
crazy.
Know if that's the coldest it's ever gotten. It's probably, I honestly don't know the true answer, but it gets that cold.
So then I said, when he said that, no wonder you drink so much.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing else to do All when right. it's that cold.
So let's get back to your adventures and becoming an investor. So you had the first property, You rented out to some roommates. When did you buy your first actual investment property?
You know, I think it was in 2018 with Glenn.
Okay.
I had found Glenn, or I realized I wanted to invest in Memphis, you know, simply because the properties were cheaper for what rent rates were. And it was, you know, it was a cheap market to start off in and very profitable.
Right.
So I think it was in 2018 we found that one. I remember the address, 1618 Janus Drive.
You still have it?
Whitehaven.
You still have it?
No.
Nope.
It was my first flip.
Oh, okay.
Yep. That was the first one I flipped.
Was that the big one, that the sprawling, like, 4,000 square foot house?
Yep. Yep. It was an old rapper that used to live there.
I went there with Glenn. Yeah. Yeah. He had a master bed bathroom the size of a most large master bedroom.
Yeah, it was like
with a sunken jacuzzi tub. Had a 8-car carport out back with a basketball court. And it was sitting in the middle of a C-plus blue-collar neighborhood. It was the strangest thing I ever saw in my life.
Yeah.
Sounds like the royal family.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I remember that house. So you bought it. What'd you buy it for, and what'd you sell it for after you rehab it? What'd you put into it?
I think I got it for $125,000, and I think it was like, I want to say, God, was it like $35,000 in rehab?
And that was it.
I don't remember.
That house was like over 3,000 square feet, if I remember.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact square footage either, but I remember my net profit being like $18,000. I had planned on like 21 or whatever. And yeah, we had some hiccups naturally, and it was, yeah, $18,000.
Did you keep the emerald green jacuzzi tub in the floor?
I did not.
You did not?
No.
Oh, that was cool. Right. It was huge. It actually belonged to some guy who hit a CD rapper. He was a rapper, hit a CD, made a ton of money, bought the house, spent all his money on cars, and then like 2 years later lost it in foreclosure.
Yeah,
because he was broke, so he didn't save anything.
All that for nothing.
But you walk in the house, and it just blew your mind at what he put into this home. It was crazy.
Yeah,
it's like going into Fraser and seeing the little 3-1 bricks, and all of a sudden next to it, you got this 3,000 square foot house that just kept going and kept going. And you walk into the bathroom, and there's just giant emerald green sunken jacuzzi in the floor and gold fixtures everywhere.
Yeah, it was insane. Very, very cool. It was very weird.
Yeah.
But it was a cool house.
It was a cool house. All right, so that was number one. You made $18,000 on that, but that and you did a couple of them. I know we did one in Germantown.
Yep, I did. I think two between that one and Germantown. There was that one. I don't even remember the address. That one was so smooth, and it was very quick. It was like 3 months. Like the other ones, I were just kind of a battle, and I had to, you know, constantly dealing with them and saying the address. But I had one that was, it was in, out,
right,
fast rehab. I don't even remember what the address of that one was. That one was like 3 months in, $30,000 profit. Like it was a dream.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. All the deals could be like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, but you learned also, the bigger you go, the more time it takes to sell, right? We did one.
Absolutely.
I think we did a big one in Germantown.
Yep. Somerset.
You dropped, $80,000 into that, or $60,000 into that?
I think it was 80. Yep.
And what did you walk away with? Because I know as soon as we got it done, it sat on the market for a long time.
Yep. And then what killed me there is I was using hard money, so the holding costs were just, they were killing me.
How long did it take Glenn to sell that house?
I don't remember. I don't remember for sure. It took a long time, though. We ended up having to do like a contract for deed, though, too. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You leased it for a year, and then the guy bought it out.
Yeah, yeah, because the guy couldn't get a loan. He made all this money but had a ton of credit. You know, he had a hard time getting a loan.
Yep.
So,
so why do you think it sat on the market so long? What was it, overpriced?
COVID hit. It was a perfect storm on that house. Like, you bought it, and it should have been a slam dunk home run, but as soon as we started and got almost done with it, COVID hit, and it was just like one thing after another.
Okay. There were a lot of problems, especially with fixing it up. You know, we ran into, I think, the rehab costs more than what we thought it was going to. Mm-hmm. That was part of it.
Then we had to lower the price. I think Glenn had lowered the price to get it sold.
We kept lowering the price, yeah. We might have had it a little overvalued, possibly, or we weren't, you know, as conservative as we should have been, maybe, but that was a learning experience. If you're going to do those higher end flips, you need to very carefully weigh out your numbers and what it's going to cost you to hang on to it.
And you got to have your oh shit column.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. You got to figure that.
A backup plan.
Right. You got to figure if the worst can happen, plan on the worst happening. And yep. if the numbers still work, then great. They don't, walk away from it.
Right.
So yeah. I know you just said that you guys kind of underestimated what the rehab costs would be. Did you take a contractor on the front end to kind of get an estimate, or are these just, you came up with your own numbers?
No, I had a contractor. He's okay. actually a realtor with you guys, Nick Gibson.
Okay.
And I had worked with him a lot, and I was very happy with what he does. Still am. He's a mm-hmm. very good contractor. And we just, you know, there was just hiccups.
Things you
that
couldn't see, like, with the yep, naked eye right away?
Really. Yep. Okay. Yep. It was just something, yeah, one thing after another came yeah. up with that.
But at
place.
Least it was a learning, you know, lesson more
right.
than anything.
What so. I really learned, the biggest takeaway I got out of that was hard money lending and how you need to be careful with that.
Hard was
money
that your lending. First hard money lending?
That was my first okay. and only, and I'll honestly probably never do it again.
Hard money lending is great. If you don't have a lot of cash, or you don't want to take out and pay all the fees on a loan and all that, and you're going to get in and out of it in 90 days.
But you better be out of it in 90
but
days.
But on the bigger properties, that's the problem, is typically the sale time of a home that's, you know, upper threes, or at least at this back at this time, close to 400,000, that is a big house and an expensive house at that time, and your market shrinks dramatically because there's so much fewer people that buy in that price range. So is that when you decided I'm done with the flips, I'm going to start doing some buy and holds? Because then you started buying, you bought five.
Yeah. Well, we came across that five property package that looked good, or Glenn came across it and brought it to me. And he said, you know, this looks good. They don't all look great, but you're going to have to get all of them. And I knew I wanted to get some buy and holds. Like, the flips were really just to get some money in my pocket.
Get started.
You know, get started. Yeah. Get some cash. And then I decided I need to have some buy and holds as well.
What made you, I know the flips were just to get started, but if you make a good profit and you can kind of get in the deal and get out, what made you change your mind to say, I want to do the long haul?
Well, I don't necessarily want to just stick to one. You know, I'd still do flips. They're kind of harder to find. And they're, okay. especially in Memphis here, it's very... A lot of everyone and their brother are doing it, you know, and mm-hmm. like Brett and I discussed earlier, you're going up against contractors who are flipping them themselves.
They're doing it, yeah.
Right.
Kind of beating you to the punch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now we drove all your properties today and you're getting good returns on those properties.
Yep.
How did you feel after you went through them today? Did you feel like, you know, you made solid investments in those five?
I think so, yeah. I mean, given the areas of them, that was, you know, and I was very happy with the one on Callahan there, that street. That
yeah.
whole street looked really good in yep. Fraser, you know, and I have pretty good tenants. They're taking good care of them. Yeah, I think I'm happy with the investment.
So, Josh, you messed up and said you self-manage from North Dakota. So I want to make sure I understand this, because I do. I have several investors, not many, but a few that self-manage from Utah. I think I've got one down in Dallas. That's pretty much it. Everybody else has management companies in place because they don't want to put forth the effort. So explain to our listeners, if you want to self-manage, what should you do? What should you look for? What are the pros? What are the cons?
I mean, the cons are your phone doesn't quit ringing. There's okay. always some issues. Really, I would say that is the only con. You are on the phone a lot. The pros, you know, property management companies, as we all know, they have a lot of fees. And they're, you know, and they may kind of seem small, but they're really not. Because what's a typical property manager charge? 10%, right?
And 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Sure.
Depends.
Yep. And then every time, you know, there's a con, every time.
So $1,000 a month rent, they're going to hit you $80 to $100 a month.
Yep. $100 a month. Yep. Mm-hmm. And every time they put someone in there, there's a new tenant in there. There's,
marketing fee.
Yeah. There's all these fees that just, they crush your cash flow. And mm-hmm. for what? You know, for making, they're lining up phone calls for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. They're, to me, this is just my opinion. They're kind of a glorified secretary.
Wow. Okay. No, I listen, I'm not going to disagree with you. We've had conversations about management companies on air many times, and I've always said there's no such thing as a great management company. They're either okay or they're shit.
Right.
Period.
Exactly.
So since you do self-manage, obviously your phone rings off the hook. Mm-hmm. When these tenants call you, do you just directly call a contractor and say, hey, I have this going on at this property?
Usually. Sometimes I'll FaceTime them and see, like, because I'm somewhat handy with things. Like, I can tell them some stuff
kinda
that they can do.
It.
Sure. Yep.
Okay.
And you know, and if not, yeah, I got a couple contractors that have done plenty of business here. Brett, you know, I've had you run over to places for me.
Mm-hmm.
You float someone a few bucks mm-hmm. for going over there and right. taking their time. And it's as simple as that. And that's all a property management company does.
Right. And then the contractor just bills you directly.
Exactly. Yep.
So you'll save on the fees and...
Exactly. And what's the property management, you know... How do you know if they're adding their own percentage mm-hmm. to
whatever?
Oh, they
do. Whatever. They add about 10% on top of that.
You see? So it's just crazy to me that anyone would, unless you have a ton of properties.
Right.
You know, if you have a ton, I mean, but I would look at hiring one person to manage them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or I would not go through a property management company, especially they have all these softwares out there. I use apartments.com, it's called. Everything, it's free up to 17 units. I pay $0. And they have lease agreements in there that are for each state. So, you know, and I have...
And you go online and your tenant goes online and pays the rent. And yep. it gets recorded and sent to you.
Exactly. They keep track of everything. It's really great. It makes self-managing very, very easy. Very inexpensive. I mean, it's not... The most I've ever put in is like $100. And that was to get like a listing boosted up to get it filled.
So correct. You're a big advocate for self-managing, like just take the time and put
if you've got five, six, seven properties,
right,
you get up in the 18, 20, something like that, it can get a little out of hand. I do have an investor who's got 40-something properties he self-manages.
Oh, wow.
And from Utah, and he does a great job of it, but that's all he does.
Right. That's all
he does.
That's
like
his day job. So
exactly.
So from the context of self-managing then, what is the biggest headache that you've encountered?
Again, it's just the phone. It is the phone calls. Sometimes they never quit, you know, and when you run into things like you guys had down here, was it last year or a couple of years ago, there were pipes bursting and stuff everywhere. Stuff like that gets stressful on you, and it's like you're calling and get someone here, get someone there. But what do you think a property management company is doing for you at that time?
Same you know, thing and overcharging.
They're putting the phone on mute.
Yeah, they're going to their biggest clients first, I'm sure. Going to the getting those houses taken care of and you know, are you going to be able to get a hold of them? And I will say I am kind of hard on property management companies because I've never used one, but it's like when I was looking into it, everyone I talked to, okay, yeah, fee for that, fee for this, fee, fee, fee. All I heard
everything
was the word
fee.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm just thinking to myself, what are these guys going to actually do?
Well, you know, Brett and Jeff have their fee. It's a bottle of Johnny Walker Black.
Yeah,
that's right. I'll do anything for a bottle. Well, almost anything for a bottle of Johnny Walker Black. Not everything, but almost.
Yeah,
well, that's a bottle of blue then, not black.
Yeah, and you know, I try not to use Brett too much to like, hey, go over and check something for me. You know,
but we do that for a lot of our investors, and we have investors that use management companies, and we tell them, look, when the management company sends you a bid. Or for something, send it to me. Let me just look at it. Let me tell you, because, I mean, sometimes you can spot, and I'll give you an example. We used a management company for a very brief moment, and I got an invoice from one of my Japanese investors saying that I've got a $3,600 plumbing bill.
Crazy.
And I said, well, send it to me.
I would lose my mind.
He sent it to me. So I started digging into it, and it turned out that the tenant called and said they had a leak under the sink, so they sent out a plumbing company. And while the plumbing company was there, they did a full scope on the house and needed to replace faucets and this, that, and the other. Oh, and the air conditioner quit working. Just quit working. So they sent an HVAC tech out there. He said, oh, no, we're going to have to replace the whole condenser. So now we're talking almost $7,000.
Yeah.
So I said, listen, this is Daniel. I said, listen, let me go out there and check the house out. Let me just go look.
And these companies don't care what it's costing you. That's the thing. They don't give a shit.
No.
At all.
So I go over. And I went in the bathroom sink where the leak was and tightened the P-trap. Leak stopped. But the water was barely coming out of the faucet. So I unscrewed the little screen on the end, full of rust. Emptied it out, put it back on, works fine. Went to the AC unit, went outside, breaker's in. Yeah, it's not coming on. I set the thermostat up and down. And I was about to leave saying, okay, you're going to have plumbing's fixed. You don't need to replace all this crap. That's BS. I saved him $3,500 there. And I'm about to leave, and I just, for some reason, I said, let me go check the breaker box. And I go in the washroom, open it up. The breaker was tripped.
It's a flip breaker.
Tripped it, air came on, and is not, the same AC unit still there 3 years later. $7,000 that they were going to hit him for. And that, to me, that management company was negligible to not even verify that those bids are legitimate. Yeah,
couldn't they just go do what you just did?
Yeah.
Couldn't they literally just take a look and...
Well, the problem is they hire contractors and vendors. And those vendors think, oh, this is an investor. He's got tons of money, so I'm just going to add this and add that.
Yeah, they don't get it.
They're there to make work for themselves instead of just go fix what you've been asked to fix.
Right.
And I'm not going to mention the name of the company. I never call them. I will never use them because I know how they operate. That's why we use Nick on pretty much everything, because Nick's a straight shooter. He's going to go out there and he's not going to go add a bunch of crap to it.
Exactly. So, he's honest. He's going to do the best he can for you numbers wise.
Just fix what's trust wrong. His work. Don't go looking at a
you
bunch
were asked
of
to go
stuff
fix
that
a
I
leaky,
never mentioned.
Leak under the sink, not to replumb the entire house.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
But meanwhile, my investor's freaking out, thinking, oh my God, I just bought this house. It's going to cost me $7,000. The air conditioner's out. There's plumbing leaks everywhere. Like, I thought I was going to walk into a house. It's going to be like that old show, The Burbs, where you walk in and everything's just falling apart.
Right.
It was nothing. It was a loose P trap and rust in the screen. That was it. Fixed.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I love to ask investors is, for you, what is your comfortable oh shit fund?
My comfortable oh shit fund. You're going to have to elaborate on that a little
bit. Your reserve funds for repairs and after the tenant turn, stuff like that.
Honestly, I use 15%. I mean, I know most are, say, 10%.
15% of your monthly rent?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be honest, I'm not very good about setting that aside. I always have my money moving and, you know, whatever. I never just keep it there. But I do plan on 15%, and even that's low sometimes. You figure things like, oh, the pipe burst down here. I mean, that just crushed me. Just about every single one of my properties had issues, other than like two of them, that with these bursted pipes. So it really, you have one bad problem, that crushes your 15% pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, more cautious.
But if you're saving yourself 10% in management fees...
Right. Then you have that extra room.
Sure, sure.
But think about someone who's paying management fees on top of that. You know, now your investment doesn't look so good anymore.
You're going to be in the negative soon.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Some investors want to make a couple $100 a month, and they want to let the tenant pay down the asset and use it for leverage later in life for retirement, whatever. And then there's other folks like you who want to build good cash flow as those properties appreciate. And, you know, I guess it depends on what, like Amish said, well, do you want to put in the sweat equity to make that more money? Or would you rather just take the easy route, the lazy route, and let somebody manage it for you?
Right. Well, and honestly, I would like to see some numbers on some of these people that are still cash flowing a couple $100 when they're using a property management company.
Well, it comes
down, I would really like to.
It comes down to one thing, and that is managing your, they call it meld, your repair list, your repairs that come through. If you manage that properly and check on it, a lot of investors don't. They just get meld saying, hey, we got to fix this. Okay, do it. $300. Oh, we got to fix this. Oh, great. Do it. $200. Well, guess what? There's your cash flow for the month gone. Right. And they don't pay attention to it, but you have to run your rental properties like a business. If you own a firehouse sub and someone just sends you a bill for 10 pounds of salami that they delivered to you, you're going to go check and make sure it's in the cooler before you pay it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Same thing with rental properties. You got to manage your business. If somebody sends you a bill saying this is wrong, you've got to take the time to understand what you're paying for. Why am I paying for it? I've gone to houses where a kid has stuffed toys down a toilet, and they're trying to get the investor to pay to have the sewer line scoped out and cleaned out when that should be the tenant's problem.
So you're watching all that stuff anyway. What do you have the property management company for?
That's a good question.
You know, that's
I guess
exactly,
so. People aren't blowing your phone up like you said.
Yes.
And just, so like that, Brett said, lazy, so, just go do it.
Exactly. Mm. It's your phone. It's just a bunch of phone calls, which brings me back to my next point. If I had so many units that it just got to be too much with this phone, I would hire one or two people and pay them some kind of fee or work something out to just answer the phone. Line this person up, line that person up. Way more cost effective.
Like you would find your own personal property management, but just for you.
Someone that can just do the phones. You know, if you have enough properties, you can afford to do that. Mm-hmm. 10, 20 properties, I'm pretty sure I could self-manage them. Especially if you have the right people in place, like Brett, I have you, and I have Nick, and I have the other Richard that, you know, helps with things. If you have the right people that you know when you send them there to get stuff done, and I know well enough now, obviously I didn't know how it would be when I first met you guys, but I know now because I've seen their work, I've seen what goes on. you can trust them.
Right.
You know, that's the biggest thing. If you can trust who you have over there.
Finding people that work well with you and know how you operate.
Absolutely. You know, build relationships is
I just can't believe there's another Richard.
You can.
My wife and I were just discussing it.
Well, guess what?
You don't find Richards here under 45.
Richard from Britain. We can't believe that either. Yeah. Trust me.
So, Josh, I actually have another question for you real quick. So you said you don't really have an oh shit fund. But now that you've experienced the pipes bursting and obviously you realize you need the oh shit money,
right.
Would you consider having an oh shit fund just for incidents like that? Or do you just like the way it's operating for you now? Like,
I guess you could consider my account. Like, I don't let my account get below a certain number. I guess you could call that a oh shit fund. But again, like, I like to keep minimal money in my accounts, and they're I always have my money moving, doing something, whether it's, you know, whether it's buying stocks, or if I have any extra money, it goes to my financial guy, or if I'm gonna, or I'm looking at buying something else, you know, like I'm down here, Brett, we're trying to buy some more stuff. I mean, I keep the minimum amount of cash to
disperse as you need. Yes. If there are issues that come up.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, do you own your properties under an LLC? Or what kind of indemnification do you have?
They're all under, between two LLCs. I have all my properties between two LLCs.
And what does your insurance look like?
My insurance, well, it went up after all those property bursts, you know. I think for all the properties, I think I'm around $7,000 a year, which is very much higher than what it used to be. I mean, we were really about $100 a month or, you know, somewhere around there per property at one time, but it's not that way anymore.
After COVID, we saw a massive increase in insurance rates, and that's been a problem. And, you know, when you factor in your insurance and your taxes, that's part of your cash flow. So.
Absolutely. You know, you got to make sure you're raising your rent to accommodate for some of those.
Yep.
I know a lot of people don't raise rent because they're worried about losing tenants and stuff, but, you know, you almost have to, or you'll go out of business. Or
you'll
bankrupt whatever.
Again, you just got to run your rental properties like a business.
Absolutely.
If you run it like a business, you'll be very successful at it. And I'm not saying that the guys that are armchair investors, we have a lot of those, they just want the mailbox money. They don't really care.
Right.
And their goal is for that tenant to pay down the note and then for that property to appreciate. And eventually you have a paid asset worth a couple $100,000.
Absolutely.
Times 10.
And do you think Memphis is a good market for that?
Absolutely.
In your opinion?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because whatever your philosophy is on investing, cash flow, while it should not be the only factor, it is a very important factor.
Right.
Because if you're negative cash flow, then you're pulling money out of your pocket every month to pay into your asset. The goal is to have a tenant paying your mortgage payment, paying your taxes,
paying your bills,
insurance, paying your repairs, and putting money in your own shit fund. So when they leave and you redo the home, you're not coming out of pocket. That's the goal. So I tell people, in order to accomplish that, you've got to start off with the 1% rule, 12% gross per year, which is simple. Pay $120,000 for a house, it needs to rent for $1,200 a month or more, starting out.
Right. And that's, you know, when I'm looking at properties, I use the 1% rule strictly just to rule them out right away without even looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as you just kind of mentioned, you need to look way past the 1% rule, look at all your numbers, because the 1% rule is really, I don't know how to say it. It's just, it's just a way to say, I don't want that one.
It's a good start.
It's a great flyover formula.
Exactly.
So you can fly over 100 homes and just boom, nope. Oh, wait, here's 1%. Set it aside. We'll evaluate in a minute. And just take that 100 house list and drop it down to 8 or 9 or 10 that you can focus on. Then dig into your more minute numbers.
Process of elimination.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think it's about beer 30. What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right. We appreciate y'all listening to us today.
Sitting here shaking.
We look forward to having you back next time.
That's why you're over there tapping your leg. He's getting anxious.
He's got the DTs going on. So remember, catch us. You can give us a call at 901-692-7401 or go to our website at mymemphisinvestmentproperties.com and go to your favorite podcast app. And please like our podcast, subscribe. We love to build up listeners, and that gives us a key indicator that actually anyone's listening to us, which is important, I think. Right, Richard? And Britton, do y'all care if anybody's listening to you? Okay, cool. I want to make sure I'm on the right track. All right, thanks a lot, guys. Y'all have a great day.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5 o'clock somewhere podcast.com. The 5 o'clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.